News now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's always fun to look at the technology of the Super Bowl.
Yes.
They've got all the latest gadgets and gizmos down there trying to get people connected with the game. We're going to review some of those technological features of the game later in the show. And finally, this week, Oracle has gotten serious about all the Java security flaws. They released a patch out of sequence that handles 50 vulnerabilities. In 1 week. So I think they finally put the A-team on it because there's been so much criticism of what they're doing. We'll also review a bit of the NASA technology that's gotten into the Super Bowl because there's a lot of things like memory foam that actually are now in players' helmets and things like that that all come out of NASA research. And we'll talk about some various other security issues, including we'll talk about some of the top seven tech jobs, the top seven tech job areas for 2013. I'll sort of go down why they're important if you want to start learning some of these things, how you go about it, and what would be a good way to, what would be a good approach, and why the field is going that way. It's kind of a good a good overview for those of you that would like to get involved with technology. And we'll talk about some projects that you could have that would help prepare you for the job market. So you've got something other than just your resume. You actually have your portfolio of something that you've done. And we're going to talk about a lady in Profile in IT that actually came from China during the Cultural Revolution. And she actually lived on the streets and was abused. And she ended up running a big tech company over here. It's quite a transformation and a great, great story. And, of course, we had a huge mailbag.
It's always huge.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes. Dear Tech Talk, I clicked on a link in a spam email that I received. Now, Tech Talk, I did that by mistake. I know I'm not supposed to do that if I get spam, but it showed that it came from my cousin, and I wasn't thinking I clicked on it. Now I'm worried that I may have picked up something, picked up some malware. I may have a keylogger on my computer. It seems okay, but I don't have any weird pop-ups or anything as far as I'm concerned. What should I do? I'm running Mac OS X version 10.6.8. Thanks, Tim. Well, the good news is, Tim, that most malware isn't really targeted against Macintosh, so chances are you're safe, because most of the malware folks out there have gone after the operating system that has the biggest penetration worldwide, which would be Windows. So chances are you're not going to be bothered, and you won't have to do much. Now, if you had a PC, I would actually do something. I'd start running your anti-malware software. I'd run an up-to-date scan on the entire machine. And then I'd use both antivirus as well as anti-spyware tools after I'd updated them. I have to tell you, I had a similar situation. I was going to download a copy of Opera browser on my computer at work, because I try to look at cross-browser capability for our website, and I've got six browsers on my machine at work, and I wanted to download Opera. So I just went to Opera download, and I just was just sort of doing something else, and I clicked on a paid ad for Opera download, and actually, it took me to a website, and it was basically downloading stuff that would have been, spyware in a sense, because I really wasn't going to the Opera website. I should never have clicked on it, because just the next link in my search was actually the correct site. But so I immediately started doing a scan to see whether I'd picked up anything in my machine, and then I checked the the quarantine box in my – we have Sophos antivirus at work. I checked the quarantine box, and bingo! Sophos had picked up the malware that that website was trying to download and quarantined it. So it actually, I was actually protected out of the bat.
Huh.
So actually, the IT department protected the thing against my bad behavior. So it does happen when you click on a link that you shouldn't do. So I can't be too critical there, Tim. We got an email from Sam in Herndon. Dear Doc, I've got a very, very bad internet connection, especially during the evenings. I mean, the download speeds are just horrendously slow. Someone advised me that I need a router.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will that be useful, and what advantage does it make? Will it require me to change my modem? Thanks, Sam. Well, first of all, Sam, a router will not change your internet speed. That's not going to do anything for your internet speed. Now, during business hours, your internet service provider, or during the evening hours, during peak hours, is actually the bottleneck. What they tend to do, they tend to oversubscribe the network for the capacity because mm-hmm. they're after the big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And so when everybody is logged on, they simply don't have enough bandwidth in the backhaul to handle all that traffic, and everybody is slowed down. Because, you see, when you get an internet connection, they'll give you the speed of the connection from your house to their backbone, but they won't guarantee a bandwidth for you. So they won't give you any bandwidth guarantees, and so you kind of have to live with what they do. This used to be a problem with all the old cable providers when they were, like, expanding their network. They would start expanding, and then the backhaul bandwidth increase would always occur later on, so you'd have these problems. The only way to get around it, of course, is to buy guaranteed bandwidth. That's what businesses do, and it's probably 10 times more expensive than what you have, which is not guaranteed bandwidth. But if you really need it for business at home, it may be worth it. Now, when I switched to Fios, I've got to say Verizon, I mean, I criticize Verizon a lot, but mm-hmm. their Fios I like. And I actually never have a slow internet connection, even at peak times. They have really jacked up their backhaul, and I've got great connection, and you know Verizon countrywide has gotten for their Fios has gotten very good reviews. So, but other smaller companies do oversubscribe.
In a previous show, you talked about Fios and how Verizon is not going to be promoting it anymore. Is Fios going away, or is it just that they're downplaying it?
They're not expanding the network anymore.
Okay, but what's out there is going to remain?
Yeah, they're not going to remove any networks because there were some rulings as to how they have to share the backhaul and some of the regulatory issues that made it not advantageous for them to expand. So they've slowed their expansion and their penetration, but they're not removing any network connections. And I do love it, but they charge an arm and a leg for it. It's not like it's really cheap.
How much is it a month?
Because, well, I think I'm getting sort of the high bandwidth option, maybe 15 megabits per second download, mm-hmm. and I'm paying probably $80, $90 a month.
Yeah.
Now, of course, and I'm not even using the phone service because I'm using voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
Now I could get a slower connection speed, but I just like that high-speed connection.
Well, you're a tech boy.
So I'm just going to – it's just – I mean, it may be something that I really don't need, but I just love having it. So I'm willing to pay an extra $30-$40 a month for that. And we just – and we got rid of all the movie channels that I don't watch. I'm really not – I just don't watch movies anymore. And so
really?
I don't watch much TV anymore. Uh-huh. You know, I've started just doing other things, and so we just went through. I do like to get some of the basic news channels, so I just went through and just got rid of all these extra movie channels that I never watch.
Well, you don't have time for this, really,
yeah,
with all the stuff that you're involved in.
I don't do that, and actually, I think with that high bandwidth connection, I probably should, if I didn't want to get some of the over-the-air channels,
mm-hmm.
I would just get rid of all of my... all my media from Verizon, and just get Netflix if I wanted a movie. I could pay like $15 a month for Netflix.
Do you do that? Do you watch movies that way, or you just don't do it at all?
No, I don't. My son does. My mm-hmm. son has Netflix, and he watches movies on his cell phone.
I don't get that. I know people that do that. It's too small.
He watches movies on his cell phone.
I mean, I can do it on an iPad.
And he gets movies at home. Well, you see, this will be the last year that he's on my phone plan.
And then he's off the payroll.
He's off the payroll. This is, you know, getting kids off the phone is always the last thing that parents do. So he's on my phone system, and we have unlimited data. So it doesn't cost anything for. But I think once he starts paying for his own, he may not use his iPhone so often.
It's free. It's free to him. But see, that's the thing. I mean, it's good. I will watch like a short video or preview something on there because it's quick, dirty, get it done, right, and get it over with. But I go cross-eyed watching a movie on my phone.
Now, what I may do is, because I do like some of the news channels, if I totally get rid of my video, I'm thinking I'm going to get an HD antenna, because and you can actually, there's a website which I'll look up at the break. I mean, I wouldn't, this is sort of, this whole thing is an aside, which was kind of
it's interesting.
So there's a website that will actually rate all the signals of all of the stations in your area and tell you which ones you can get and whether you need an indoor antenna, an outdoor antenna, or an attic antenna. It will tell you which direction to point it.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, since they've gone to digital television, you can get really good reception over the air if you've got a good enough signal.
That's the problem, if you have a good enough signal. But are you outside the Beltway?
Yeah,
it's like it's analog versus like AM radio at night. You know how you can DX mm-hmm. at night and hear things?
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to do that anymore. It's the same with TV. With digital, you either have it or you don't.
You have it, and so you need an amplifier.
Yeah.
And so if you get like a 50 dB amplifier, you can handle that. So
I tried doing this, and there were things that I got rid of the cable, and I was watching mm-hmm. things using a converter box.
Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It's tough. Yeah, there's things I want to see. And the great thing about cable, and this is not endorsing these guys, mm-hmm. but is the on-demand thing, because I can pick and choose the stuff that I want to see when I want to see it. And that for me works.
Yeah, well, I'm not giving up on my over-the-air, because see, the thing is, if I don't redirect the antenna, I can get two stations.
Mm-hmm.
But to get all the stations, I've got to turn the antenna, because I need an antenna that has some directionality, because I need a high gain antenna because I'm out there. And so once you go to high gain, it means that your antenna has a beam like a flashlight, and you got to point it around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I just go to an omnidirectional antenna where I don't direct it, the gain is so low that actually I may not be able to pick everything
right
up. So the trade-off is whether you point the antenna or not. And I think I'm located where I have to point the antenna, which means I may have to play around with it. But that's really
interesting. But you like doing that kind of stuff, so you'll have fun with that.
Well, see, that'll kind of be a tech talk topic.
Exactly.
You know?
It's
and,
all
and
homework.
I'll see, it's all homework, and it's my desire. So,
yes.
So I guess if you want to look at the priority here, I'm not going to give up the $80 for my internet connection, because I just love that screaming fast internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm willing to give up all the movies and all the video. And I've already given up the phone, because I'm on Ooma, and I pay for my phone system like, you know, $15 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that just pays for the taxes. And I love Ooma, because if anybody leaves a voicemail message for me, I get an MP3 sent to my cell phone.
Wow.
I can listen to it anywhere in the world. I can log on, so it's really quite nice. That's OOMA.com. Okay, that was all an aside. And I don't even know where we got. Oh, yeah.
But that was interesting, you know?
Okay, we were talking about the internet connection. He had a slow internet connection, yeah.
So we gave him a slow answer to a slow internet connection.
So here's the deal. So the router's not going to help you with your internet speed. The router does two things. It could provide a hardware firewall, which is very good. So the router could give you good security, which I would advise. Now, it may be that from your internet service provider, what you're calling your modem actually has a router built into it,
mm-hmm.
and you may already have a firewall there, in which case you do not want to cascade them. But if it's just a pure modem and no firewall, I think a router would be nice for a firewall. The second thing that a router can do, it allows you to share your internet connection with more than one computer. Now, you only have one computer, so it doesn't really make much difference to you. So the router's not going to help with your speed problem, but it may help you with your security issues if you need the firewall. We got an email from Alice. Dear Doc, I just got a new Windows computer. Woohoo! How should I set it up? Thanks, Alice. Well, Alice, the first step when you set up your new computer would be to ensure that it's just like you like it, and then make a recovery image of your new machine. So this is what I would do. First of all, just as you purchased it, I would basically install backup software and create an image on an external hard drive. You can buy an external hard drive for, you know, less than $100. And you can download Macrium Reflect, Macrium Reflect, and you just go to macrium.com, reflectfree.aspx. I'll give you the website later on. You can download that free software, and then you can use that to create a full backup image to the external hard drive. And you save that image, and that's as you have it right out of the box. So if something would ever happen to your machine, you could actually restore it from that backup, and it would be exactly as you had it when you bought the machine. Now, that's step one. Now, the second thing I would do is I'd log onto the internet, and I'd update everything. I mean, because, you know, there are all these security updates for your operating system. You got security updates for Java, security updates for all the applications. I would actually get all the updates done. And that, chances are, that's going to take you, you know, an hour or so, because typically they come with a lot of missing updates when you get the machine, because mm-hmm. they actually created that disk image maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and a lot of updates have come out since then. So I would take and update everything so that it is, as up-to-date from a security point of view as it can be, and then I would take another image of this thing, because you were taking an image all along the way, and then you've got an image of your hard drive as you received it after it's been updated. Then you want to get rid of the bloatware.
Bloatware.
Bloatware. I mean, that's a nice. I call it crapware, but this is. But this is.
This is a family show. We can't say crapware on the
air. This is bloatware. Mm-hmm. And so, what you want to do is you want to go to the control panel, programs and features, and you look at the list of software that's installed, and I'd start uninstalling stuff you don't want. And what they do is they put a bunch of trial versions on there of software that you actually don't want. Mm-hmm. And the companies pay them to put that trial version on there. So the company might pay them $10 to put a trial version on your computer. And I get rid of all those trial versions. I mean, unless I intend to actually, pay for them to make them permanent. I just uninstall all of those items that the software vendor was paid to put on your machine. Mm-hmm. So all of this bloatware is actually crass commercialization, where they just make money and you're stuck with it. So I'd go there and actually uninstall them. You know, you just don't want to leave them there, because they take up hard drive space. They may actually cause your boot up times to be a little bit slower. And I'd uninstall everything. Now, sometimes it's hard to uninstall these things completely, because they have files and links all over the mm-hmm. place. Especially if they might corrupt your machine during boot up, the registry that you use during boot up. So you might want to go to like an uninstaller program. There's a free one out there called Revo Uninstaller, Revo, R-E-V-O, RevoUninstaller.com. You can download that, and then you can actually do a complete uninstall of all the things. So now, once you've got all the bloatware done, you've got all the security updates done, then you might create a final backup image, and this would then be the final backup image that you would use forever. And then if something happens to your machine, you can just pull it up. So those are all the things that I would do. Most people actually never make a backup image. They just forget about it. And, you know, the problem is they don't send you distribution disks anymore. Mm-hmm, so if your Windows crashes, they say, well, install your disks and reinstall your Windows. But you don't have any disks. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that this image is your disk. And so it's just really convenient if you have this image in case your machine just crashes or your hard drive crashes, you can actually very easily bring it back up to the state it was right when it was new. That was a great question. We got an email from Mary Ann. Dear Tech Talk, I checked into my hotel, which provides free high-speed internet. All was well and good, except after a while I could no longer send email. I could receive all that I wanted, but my attempts to send failed. The next morning, sending email started working again for a while. What's going on? Thanks, Marianne. Well, Marianne, I've run into this problem at all in some hotels. The reason, actually, if you think about it, makes sense. And the root cause of all this are spammers. Many hotels are intercepting the mail being sent to any outgoing mail servers. They intercept with the outgoing mail goes to port 25, they intercept it, and instead of connecting to your server, it's connecting to their email program, and they zip out the email. That allows them to control the amount of outgoing email, because they don't want somebody to start sending out spam from their servers or from their email account, because they don't want their email account or their IP address to be blacklisted. Mm-hmm. Then nobody can send any email. And since they've got this open Wi-Fi for anybody there, they don't know what people are doing. And people can check into the hotel, and they can have a spam bot on their computer, and they don't even know it. And that spam bot just starts sending out email through the hotel. And so the hotel just limits how many emails you can send, just to keep their their account from being blacklisted. Now, here are some of the workarounds that I use. I just use webmail. I mean, if you log on to, say, Gmail, mm-hmm. you're sending it from the Gmail server. So it's not a problem. It's only when sure. you use it from a POP client, post office protocol client on your computer where you send it through the systems. You could also use an alternate port. Remember what I said, port 25 is the typical outgoing mail port. But if you provide outgoing mail over a secure socket layer connection, frequently that port is either 465 or 587. So you might be able to do an SSL connection with your email and use another port, which the hotel doesn't intercept. And, of course, you always have what we talked about earlier, a virtual private network. If your corporation has a VPN, you could just set up a VPN, and then all your email would go out through your corporation servers. It wouldn't be a problem. Those would be three workarounds. But that was a great question,
yeah.
and it's a problem that many hotels do have, and that's how they try to solve it. And the thing is, if you talk to the IT support at the hotel, they may not even know that. So they won't be able to tell you anything. We got an email from Jessica in Lansdowne. Dear Tech Talk, I've been using Viber on my cell phone, and I love it. Recently, I've been using Viber texting. The person I've been chatting with was able to identify my location.
Uh-oh.
How can they do that? Could be a problem.
Yeah.
Could be problematic. Is there a way that I can turn off that feature? Thanks, Jessica. Well, Viber is an iPhone app. I love this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Viber is an iPhone app. It's a voice over IP iPhone app, and it allows you to make phone calls or send text messages using the data connection. So, like whenever I'm traveling around the world, I use my Viber connection with Wi-Fi. In the U.S., I don't have to even have Wi-Fi because I can just use the data connection on my Verizon account. But if I'm in Wi-Fi, it will use it. Well, it turns out that when I send a text message with Viber, when you send a text message with Viber, it shares your GPS location. And the person you're chatting with can click on a little icon just to the right of the text message, and it pops up with a map and gives the address of where you're at.
Yikes.
At that moment.
That's not good.
So you could say, hello, honey, I'm sitting out here in Virginia, and then all of a sudden it pops up that you're in Delaware.
That would be bad.
Yeah, so that would be bad. So here's the thing. You can turn that off. So what you want to do with your iPhone, you go to Settings, and then you scroll down and you go to Privacy. And then under Privacy, the first entry is what they call Location Services. Click on that. And then there will be a whole list of programs that use Location Services. Scroll down to Viber and turn off the permission to use location data.
Mm-hmm.
And you're done.
Hey.
It's not going to happen. It's very easy to do. Now, by the way, if you look at that list, you'll notice that you're also sharing GPS data with all your pictures with the picture application.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you take a picture, your GPS location is embedded in the header of that picture. And so this is actually also problematic. People will post pictures to Facebook, and their address and their location is embedded
Yikes.
Right in that picture. So you can actually read it. You can actually, in fact, some people like this when they go on vacation. They post all their pictures to an application, and it shows a path of where they've taken all the pictures as they go through their vacation. So I know the military had this as an issue because there were guys that were in, like, secret locations sharing iPhone pictures, and they thought, well, I'm in my tent. Nobody can tell where I am. But then the GPS data was there.
Mm-hmm.
So the military had to go in and do a lot of education to get people to turn that off. So now, it is nice to have the location data there if you're trying to keep track of where you were when you were on vacation. Say, well, where was I when I took that picture? The GPS data is there. You can go on a map, and it'll tell you exactly where you were.
Mm-hmm.
So it is nice to have it. If you'd like to turn it off, you do the same thing. Just go to the privacy settings, click on location, and just go down to camera and turn it off. And you'll see everything else that shares your data. Now, I like my location data, say, for Google Maps.
Sure.
When I'm doing, say, when I'm looking for a restaurant, I'll use Yelp.
Yeah.
And I like it. Say, can I use your location? I like to share it with Yelp. So there are applications where I like to share it with, but you really like to know where you're going to share it.
Because of that, I'm leery using it at all.
Well, you can turn off location services,
mm-hmm.
but you can actually go there and you can look at you could actually turn it off for all applications except Maps
mm-hmm.
and Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so
mm-hmm.
you actually have it under your complete control. It's just that most people never look. And when the application first installs, it asks you a whole bunch of questions. That's when it decides whether it can use your data.
Gotcha.
So those questions that you answer right in the beginning are what set it. But if you want to reverse your answer, just go to the privacy and then location services, and you can reverse that. Well, that was a great question.
Yeah, a lot of great questions today. But Doc, you have to keep this going. People have to send us emails.
Yeah,
for us
we
to have a
love your emails. Send emails to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we're also monitoring the Facebook page.
Yes.
Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and we are looking for your comments.
Exactly. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Heard every Saturday at 9 o'clock on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we are going to feature Ping Fu.
Ping Fu, you say?
Ping Fu. Her first name is Ping, and her last name is Fu, F-U, Ping Fu. Ping Fu is a Chinese refugee from the Cultural Revolution and is co-founder and CEO of GeoMagic, a 3D software company. Ping Fu was born in 1958 in Nanjing, China. Nanjing, China. I should have an aside on this.
You should Nanjing. Have it. You said that twice, and I thought something is...
Yeah, you see, the original capital of China was Xi'an, which is more or less in the middle. That was like 5,000 years ago. And then there was a sort of a southern invasion, and they switched it to the southern capital, Nanjing. And Nanjing means southern capital. It's down near, you know, close to... It's down in the Hong Kong area, Nanjing. And then when they had the invasion of the Mongols from the north, and they had the Ming Dynasty, they moved it to the northern capital, and the northern capital is Beijing, and that means northern capital. So it went from Nanjing to Beijing.
We're all full of sidebars today.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why.
That's not even relevant
to Ping Fu, but it's just fun to know.
Knowledge is fun.
And so we think the Ming Dynasty is really old. Well, it's only 800 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chinese think those are the new guys on the block because, you know, the terracotta warriors are from the old capital of Xi'an, which is 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, time's all relative.
I mean, when you consider America's been around for a little over 200 years, that's a drop in the bucket.
It is a drop in the bucket. That's right. And we just bought a hotel in Ireland that was actually built before the United States had...
I hadn't thought of that.
That was built in 1750, the Park Hotel, which we're having for our study abroad location, before America even existed. So there we go. Okay, sorry for all those. Okay, let's get back to Ping Fu.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, Ping Fu was born 1958 in Nanjing, China. Her father was a professor at the Nanjing University of Aeronautics and Astronautics. Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Her parents sent Ping to Shanghai to be raised by her aunt and uncle, who had five kids. Now, in 1966, as part of the Cultural Revolution. This was when, you know, Mao took over as part of the Cultural Revolution. Ping was taken from her Shanghai family and returned to where she was born in Nanjing. Both of her parents, who were viewed as intellectuals, were sent to the country for re-education as they worked on the farm. So during the duration of the Cultural Revolution, Ping Fu had to take care of her little sister, who was only 4 years old. And, I mean, she was, let's see, this was 66, and so she was born at 58. So so she was not very old herself. No. I mean, she was like 8 years old. And so, I mean, no, 58, 68, yeah, she was
eight years old.
So she and her sister was four. So she was more or less on the streets having to take care of herself. And she attended sessions at Mao, where she learned Mao's little red book. She performed mandatory military service. She worked on farms and in factories. And the thing that was most shocking when I read it, she suffered quite from a gang rape. And it was, you know, very heavily humiliated, and they called her an old shoe. And so she was really, really had huge barriers to overcome. Now, in 1976, Mao Zedong died, and the Cultural Revolution came to an end. And so at that point, they reopened the universities. So Ping, I think, because she'd had a reasonably good education, and I guess, you know, had been inspired by her parents to continue to study, she just continued to be self-taught as much as she could. And she took the first entrance exam for the newly opened university, and she was admitted, which was, you know, quite a feat. But probably coming right after the Cultural Revolution, the kids probably didn't have that much preparation, and she had enough of an edge that she got in. So she started working on her undergraduate degree, and then while she was an undergrad, she had a thesis that she had to write, and she was researching the effects of China's newly implemented one-child policy, and she discovered the practice of female infanticide. And so she wrote this big paper about female infanticide, which was apparently a huge problem in the country, because everybody wanted a son, and they could only have one child.
Yeah.
And so a story based on Ping's research was published in Shanghai's largest newspaper and another one in People's Daily. And then the communists took note of her. And they said, this girl is trouble. Because then the foreign press got involved. It got to be a big stink. Mm-hmm. And she was forced to leave the country. So in 1983, she left China and came to the U.S. She had no English. She could not speak English. She probably came under refugee status. I'm not really quite certain how she got here. It's a little vague. And I went and I listened to her interview. You know, she gave quite a long YouTube interview, and then I read several articles on her. But it was very vague about how she actually got here. She showed up without any English skills. She enrolled at University of New Mexico. She first took English as a second language, ESL, and then she enrolled in the Master of Science degree in computer science. Now, she had to work her way through school. I mean, she worked, obviously she was working illegally, but she could do it. She worked as a babysitter, she worked as a cleaning lady, and then when her English skills picked up, she worked as a waitress. Now, shortly before she finished her Master of Science degree there at University of New Mexico, She moved to San Diego and enrolled in UCSD as an undergraduate. Now, you see, I think she didn't want to get her master's degree. She went back to the undergraduate level because she wanted to have her student visa status continued.
Mm-hmm.
This is typically what you see when students don't have everything set. So she enrolled in UCSD, and she earned a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science in Computer Science from UCSD. And by that time, she'd been in school quite long. She'd really received, I think at that point, two bachelor degrees and two master's degrees. She was quite prepared. And then she got an offer from Bell Labs at Naperville, Illinois. Pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
Pretty impressive. So she got it, and probably through her connections there at UCSD, she got an offer at Bell Labs because she was clearly bright and she was very good mathematically. Now, Bell Labs was very close to the University of Illinois there at Urbana. And while she was working at Bell Labs, she took some additional classes at the University of Illinois at Urbana, and that's where she met her future husband. He was a computational geometry professor, Herbert Edelsbrunner. Edelsbrunner. What do you think?
I think I'm going with Edelsbrunner. Yeah.
Edelsbrunner. Herbert Edelsbrunner, a computational geometry professor. She was hired then by the National Center for Supercomputing Applications in 1990, and she worked there to work on the fields of virtual reality, image processing, scientific virtualization, massive storage, and user interface. She took the job at NCSA because she wanted to be close to her future husband, Herbert Edelsbrunner.
You got it right that time.
Thank you. That's good. You know, I'm really concentrating.
Like here. I would know.
I'm really concentrating. Now, what was interesting, she had a group there at NCSA, and she hired in her group a postgraduate an undergraduate student by the name of Mark Andresine.
Who we've had on Profiles in IT before, yes.
Yeah, he worked in her lab in 1992. Of course, Andresine was the guy that worked on the Mosaic browser, and he went on to co-found Netscape Communications, mm-hmm. which had the big browser. They got in the big browser war with Microsoft. So she was in the hub of a really innovative group. Now, NCSEA and University of Illinois offered to back new ventures of any researchers. See, this is when Andresine was like starting Netscape, and so they were all excited about the web. So they thought, hey, let's back some stuff. So she decided to co-found with her husband GeoMagic, and GeoMagic was used many of the research results that her husband had used in computational geometry. Now, her goal was to develop software that could take data from 3D scanners, process it, and output it onto a 3D printer. Now, this was an idea that was long before its time. This was before we had 3D printers.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to do for 3D printing what Adobe did for publishing. So, see, this was
That's
back,
a tall task.
It is a tall task. So, this was back in the mid-1990s, and long before 3D printers were really a thing. Now they're talking about 3D printers to make robots. They're talking about, you know, using 3D printers for production. They're really, the whole 3D printer field is just exploding as a way to mass produce things. So in 1999, GeoMagic partnered with Boeing and Mattel and raised $6.5 million in VC financing. At that point, her husband moved the company to Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. In 2005, Ping was selected by Inc. magazine as Entrepreneur of the Year. In 2012, Ping published a memoir, Bend Not Break, and it got phenomenal reviews. But after it came out, she got a huge amount of criticism because people were saying, hey, how did she get her student visa, and she got 2 degrees, and they were looking at all the irregularities right at the beginning. But, you know, she did what she did. But mm-hmm. So there was a huge controversy, and you can read about that whole controversy on Wikipedia. But I think she just did what she could do. She just worked the system in order to stay here and make a difference and make a contribution. In early January 2013, 3D Systems announced an agreement to acquire GeoMagic. So she sold it out. I couldn't find how much. Ping was married to Herbert Edelsbrunner in 1991, but they divorced in 2008. They have one daughter, Shishi Edelsbrunner, who was born in 1993.
That's quite the name.
Shishi. What do you think? XIXI is Shishi.
No, I think you're right, yeah.
Shishi Edelsbrunner. So Ping Fu was our profile in IT, and she overcame enormous adversity to make a difference here in the U.S. And I think this is a lot of companies were started by people that came to this country and had a chance to use our entrepreneurial ecosystem to sort of build companies. And so this is the kind of thing we'd like to see more of.
Is this possible in today's climate for people to do this?
It's much tougher now mm-hmm. because there's this backlash. They don't want people to come here, go to school, and stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's actually, I think having immigrants come here who go to school and are inspired to work and to create, I think it helps the whole country. It's not like they're coming here to take advantage of the social safety net. They're coming here to actually contribute to America, and I think it makes America much more powerful. But it's getting all hung up with this whole immigration debate. We're losing our sort of our innovation edge that we'd always had. And guess who we're giving it up to? India and China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because now people are just going back there and starting the companies.
Well, this is an involved question, but you know, do you think, is it too late to reverse this trend? And do you think we're headed that way?
I think we can if we make the sort of the immigrants who are coming here to make a difference in the country welcome, and we they are trying to do that, like the Senate is trying to increase the quota on H-1B visas,
mm-hmm.
which would be very, very helpful in terms of, because people can get their degree, then they can stay here long enough to work and make a difference there. And so I think people are now becoming aware of this issue. And so even this was a bipartisan bill in the Senate. So I'm hoping that we can make a difference, but it's but we've lost a lot of momentum.
The term immigrant has become a pejorative term.
It has.
We think of people who come here and don't contribute to the system, but that's
right.
Only part of it.
That's only part of it. These are folks that come here to go to school, to graduate, to start businesses, to work here. They are actually motivated to achieve, and they're more contributors to the economy rather than takers from the economy. And we've got this whole mishmash of immigration discussion, and I think the students and the student visas, the H-1Bs, have all gotten tied in with that. And then there's this further backlash where you're saying, why do we want foreigner students coming in here if we don't have enough jobs for our current engineers?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a desire, you know, to stop the flow of international students coming here, but actually it's the innovation they create. So she created jobs. It's not like she took a job.
No.
Her company created lots of jobs.
Sure.
And, you know, AMD was started by somebody from another country. There are just probably 50 or 60% of the technology companies started in the last 15 years were from people that started, came from another country. And
mm-hmm.
I think we want to keep and maintain that.
This has become Sidebar Central.
Yes,
sorry
it
about
has.
That. And this is only an hour show. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention to all of that because you have a chance to win prizes for your knowledge. Stand by. The pop quiz is next on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077. FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You thought this was a radio show.
I'm not fighting this anymore.
I know, but it's a classroom of the airways. That's what we're trying to establish each and every week by virtue of the quality of the information that we provide. Now, earlier in the show, we talked about Ping Fu.
Mm-hmm.
She, of course, is a Chinese refugee who co-founded GeoMagic. Now, if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, which we're going to give in just a minute, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. Now, if you remember, we talked about where Ping Fu was born.
Yes.
If you can remember the name of that city and you call us in, you will get those tickets either to the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room down in Woodbridge.
You're ramping it up today. You're going to the higher end of the knowledge pool with
yes,
this question.
Yeah, I certainly am.
I think south of China, right? We'll be thinking, right?
Nanjing, yeah, the southern capital is what it means.
Okay, well, so much for ramping up the... Okay, if you have the answer to that question, you need to call us right now.
But it has to be the Chinese answer.
Right, okay. If you're calling from west of Naperville, Illinois, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of University of New Mexico, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, as always, the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
Or you can call in on Skype if you're calling in from, southern... Australia.
Yeah.
You can call on Skype. Simply call Tech Talk Radio 1, and that will be forwarded directly to the studio.
Dingo ate my phone.
That's right. You know, I'm thinking that the, you know, our academic accreditations think this pop quiz is too easy. But, you know,
we keep giving away the answers.
I'm going to try to slip this one through. Okay. Now, Oracle responds to security Java flaws with Java flaws with 50 fixes. Oracle's been under increasing pressure to finally fix their security flaws. On February 1st, Oracle released a massive security patch, fixing at least 50 different issues. The February 13th critical patch update for Java SE was originally scheduled for February 19th, but given at least one of the vulnerabilities was being actively exploited, Oracle decided to expedite the patch. Of the 50 patches, 40 of them were specific to Java usage on web browsers, which have been the primary attack vector, as they say, against Java.
What's the vector, Victor?
Yeah, that's right. What's the vector? And so at the end of the week, Oracle publicly posted an audio call with its Java security team where the team admitted that Java needed to be fixed. Oracle issued the critical one-off patch 2 weeks ago to fix a flaw that had been actively exploited at the time. But that patch, in turn, missed at least one flaw that had been exploited over the last 2 weeks, and now is part of the 50 flaw fix. Looking at the contents of the critical patch update, Java revealed that 49 of the 50 were allowed for remote exploitation without authentication. Oracle's risk matrix showed that 35 of the flaws carried the CVSS score of 10. That's the common vulnerability scoring system used to provide common matrix to determine risks. In other words, 10 represents the most serious and immediate risk. 35 of them were there. This is why I recommended last week you have multiple browsers, and the browsers you use to just surf around untrusted websites, you want to disable the Java add-on, mm-hmm. and then have one browser that's got the Java enabled and only go to sites that you absolutely trust. I mean, that was really an issue. Now, at least Oracle's responding. We'll see next week. We'll report next week how effective this update has been. Oracle scheduled 3 more planned security updates for June, October, and January. So at least Oracle is responding, and it's about time.
Okay. This is going to be the least difficult pop quiz ever. Let's go to Tommy calling from Fairfax, Virginia. We'll just go through the motions here. Tommy, welcome to Tech Talk. How are you this morning?
I am just fine. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Dr. Schertz, ask the question.
Okay, where was Peng Fu, the co-founder of Geomagic, born?
Nanjing.
Nanjing, that is correct. And that is one of the, you know, I we're going to have to grade on the curve here. Probably everybody's going to get A on this pop quiz, but congratulations for getting the correct answer. You'll get 2 tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. Stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew.
Tommy, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio today. And, of course, we are going to be right back with more. We're running a little bit behind schedule here, but more Tech Talk is coming up in just a moment here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2.
It's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
A budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
So today we're waiting very carefully, with great anticipation for the Super Bowl that's going to be on tomorrow. And this will be one of the most high-tech games in the history of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Now, particularly the stadium down there in Texas and Dallas.
It's at the Superdome.
At the Superdome. at the Superdome. Yeah, at the Superdome. That's right. Thank you so much. That's right. I should have known that.
Yeah.
I should have known.
How did you mess that up?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, the data center there at the Superdome, which was just very recently built, has a virtualized server infrastructure. So They've got a whole data center with virtualized servers. Got 100 terabyte SANS core memory, storage area network. Now, the stadium boosts a high-definition video screen. Get this. It's 72 feet tall and 160 feet wide. Costs $40 million. It's one of the largest high-definition screens ever made.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in addition to that, 3,546-inch high-definition screens scattered throughout the stadium. Now, the officials are going to track, using GPS devices, all the players and the performers. They'll even track the Lombardi Trophy during its travels to and from the stadium. They're going to make certain that nobody gets lost. They're going to track everybody. Maybe they're going to have them all call in with Viber and track where they are. Or they could have GPS, GPS tracking is used for everything. The stadium will be equipped with free Wi-Fi for all the fans in attendance.
I think it'll be interesting to talk about this next week to see if it crashed
jammed. It'll be fun to see. Now, all the major wireless carriers, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, are ramping up the signals around the stadium to make certain that customers don't lose their service. See, the problem is you can only carry so many simultaneous phone calls, so you've got to really get more capacity to the stadium for this. Now, Sunday will be the first Super Bowl since the advent of the modern tablet computer, in particular the Apple iPad. The NFL has apps now for both the iPad and the Android. Now, these are geared toward people attending the game. The app includes, now this would be the app which I downloaded on my iPhone. It's called Super Bowl Guide. That's Super Bowl 47 Guide. And that includes, includes all the restaurants and bar locations, tools to find parking, concessions, restrooms in the stadium. It also has the ability to check in to see who else is at the game via mobile check-in apps. Now, there's also the NFL mobile app. Now, this is available. I downloaded this, the NFL mobile app. This is only available for Verizon on the Verizon network. But this allows you to stream the game real-time to either your cell phone or your iPad.
And this is the problem, don't you think? Because people are going to be there at the game, and they can't see the commercials, so they want to watch these things on their mobile device.
They're going to watch them. That's right. So these NFL apps are really hot. Also, ESPN and USA Today have developed their own game-specific apps. Each team has their official team app. So you can keep track of all the statistics, download the official team app. either for the 49ers or for the Ravens, if you want. Now, the app that's my favorite is the Ad Bowl app, because I think when I watch the games, I we always like to get together and rate the ads.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Sort of like it's kind of a game. And so the Ad Bowl apps let you rate each commercial that comes up in real time. It tallies your rating against all the other ratings, and you can see real time ratings on the ads as they go through. Now, that's actually, I have to say, frequently, rating the ads is more important than what is more fun than watching the game, because so many of these games are so lopsided.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of a highlight for me. So I love this Ad Bowl app. Now, Audi is going to use a Twitter hashtag at the end of its 60-second spot. It's going to be, #progress is. And if you tweet something with that hash mark, you become eligible to win a test drive in their supercar. And I mean, and they make a $25,000 donation, not to you, but to your favorite charity.
Aha.
You know, I'm thinking they'd get more people sign up if they just give them $25,000. That's right. Bridgestone and Mercedes are also going to have their own Twitter hashtag. Now, Google wants to chart your Super Sunday from wake up to hangover. they have a page called Game Day with Google. Mm-hmm. On a single page, users get real-time information ranging from how to prepare party snacks to what to expect from Madonna's halftime performance. I forgot about Madonna.
She's not doing it this year. It's Beyonce.
That's Beyonce. Yeah, that's it. That's right. It's Beyonce's doing this year.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about the NASA technology at the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Okay, probably no other government agency invented more technologies on display than NASA.
And this is really more for what the players are wearing, right?
That's right. Helmets and pads. NASA developed a variety of shock-absorbent foams to protect astronauts during takeoff and landing. These foams conform to the shape of your body and then return to the original shape. Memory foam, as it's now called, is in the helmets as well as the shoulder and knee pads. Safety visors. Astronauts walking on the moon, for astronauts walking on the moon, NASA invented anti-UV, anti-glare, anti-scratch coatings for the visors. And these same visors are then used by the players.
Mm-hmm.
The visors shield their eyes from glare and also keep the opposing players from seeing where they're looking, which is very important for, say, the quarterback.
Yeah, sure.
Shoes. NASA engineers invented a cushioning material for space boots designed to reduce fatigue by stabilizing the boots and absorbing shock. The material is now used in the midsoles of athletic devices. These are like they've got these shoes that have air bubbles, air chambers in the bottom. Those shoes with the air chamber, that idea was developed by NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Sports fashion. Modern sportswear lets perspiration pass through the material, but then it traps and manages to release heat from the body. NASA's been using these materials for spacesuits for quite a while. Now more than 200 brands use it, so it's likely that every player in the field will be using this type of material that actually lets the moisture come out. And then, of course, wireless headsets. NASA invented the wireless headset.
Mm-hmm.
For their missions on the moon. They've come a long way since then, but now they're used by the quarterback, defensive players, and usually the middle linebacker. Video stabilization software. NASA didn't invent video recording, but they did invent video stabilization because they were tracking the launch. You know, when they get this launch up there and they had to stabilize the video so they could track the launch as the rocket was taking off. So those are just a few of the items that were kind of exciting that were going to be here at the Facebook. I guess we've just got about 30 seconds left.
About that.
This year, this last week, Twitter accounts were compromised. It turned out that people had used the Java. They think that they'd used this Java vulnerability to go in there and get on some of the servers and compromise about 250,000 Twitter accounts. Mm-hmm. But they were reset and it's okay.
Good.
Well, I tell you, the show just goes by so quickly.
It does.
Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and make certain to go to the techtalkonline.com. You can sign up for the podcast and then go to stratford.edu, check out the programs, and let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk. Radio.
And, of course, if you like this program, you can hear it again at 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
George Washington Colonials basketball. They visit the LaSalle Explorers in Philadelphia today. Coverage starts at 1:30, tip-off at 2. And then tonight, the Wizards take on the San Antonio Spurs. That starts at 8:15, the tip-off at 8:30 here on Federal News Radio. Weather forecast, light snow likely later this afternoon. Little or no accumulation, a high near freezing. Right now, inside our studios in Northwest, it is 20 degrees at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.